Today, I'm talking to Paul Kohler, who's a Liberal Democrat MP for Wimbledon and party spokesperson for transport. Welcome back to Radio Jackie, Paul.
Thank you for inviting me, Jackie.
Shall we talk about your headphone campaign? Sadiq Khan has recognised your calls and has targeted tube and bus passengers who blast out loud music or converse on loudspeaker, with a poster campaign starting on the Elizabeth line, urging people to be mindful of their fellow travellers. It is a start, with a view to rolling out on buses, DLR, overground and underground networks. Have you any idea of the timescale of this campaign?
There isn't. We are asking about that, but we haven't got one yet. And it's very kind of you to say it's successful. It will be successful when people stop actually using their phones without headphones. But it's a start, as you say. It's a start, and I'm very pleased he's listened to our calls. Now we've got to ramp up the publicity campaign. We've got to ultimately, if people don't play ball, the minority who will still refuse. Some prosecutions will have to ensue, as they have done in France recently. But most people will comply. Most people, it's thoughtless, not deliberately provocative. But ultimately, we need fixed penalty notices and the occasional prosecution if people absolutely refuse.
And as you've said, do you think a campaign poster is enough, or do you think there should be enforcement or maybe on-the-spot fines?
Yeah, I think the model is, of course, what happens with fare dodging, where you have revenue enforcement officers going along who give fixed penalty notices, and people have the option of either paying those within a time frame when it's reduced. Those that don't, ultimately, the ultimate sanction is a fine of £1,000 via the courts. That would be the same model for headphone dodgers.
So going on to Southwestern Rail, I understand you met with Lawrence Bowman, who is the MD of Southwestern Rail, asking an exp or demanding an explanation to summer service cuts and disruption. I understand there are now more arterial trains in use. I think there was eight, there are now 20. I don't know how many are still being sitting. Well, I think they're sitting between, is it Clapham Junction? They're going to go to the completed Feltham depot at some stage. But what's happening on that? How much is it still costing every month, do you think?
Well, it's still we are paying 5.5 million for the rental and the storage. Yes, I suppose that maybe the storage cost has come down a bit because we've now got 20 out of mothballs. That still leaves over 70 not on the on the system. Laura, I met Lawrence. I've got a lot of time for Lawrence. Actually, he impressed me hugely. Yeah, I talked to my media team about when they put that tweet out saying I demanded. I hate that level of rhetoric. I asked politely, and he answered me politely. He knows it's ridiculous. He's inherited this problem. They are doing their best now to roll them out. They are getting drivers on training. They are rostering people onto the new system, and so he has promised me as fast as they can they will get them out. It's an inexcusable delay, but I do believe he's now doing his best to get them out, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, because you've recently said call for a freeze on bus on train fares to get people back on the trains. So we need a good train service to get people back on the trains, don't we?
I think that's right. And it's always very easy for politicians to always say, spend more money or don't put a price increase. But my argument is, look, yes, we need more revenue on the trains. But rather than increasing prices and putting people off going by train, we've got to put a halt to those increases. It's quite incredible that apart from a dip in the pandemic, there has been a flat line in rail passenger numbers for over a decade now. Since 2015, there's been an absolute flat lining of passenger numbers. We need to get more people back on the train, and we do that by stop increasing prices. Already, travellers, passengers in the UK pay far more than they do in France. One of my daughters is in California at the moment. She came back to see us a couple of weeks ago. She said to me she was amazed how expensive our trains are. It just says everything that even someone from America is coming back and seeing how expensive our trains are over here. So we need to do that. And of course, the idea is we put a halt to price increases, we'll increase numbers, and therefore use the spare capacity to actually earn some more money.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to break this vicious circle, haven't you? Declining train services, therefore declining passenger numbers, because of fact you've got to halt this somewhere and get everybody back on the trains, which I would
Yeah.
use all the time if it wasn't so expensive sometimes.
Well, exactly. And talk to anyone. Whenever you go as a family anywhere, if it's more than one person traveling, it's so much cheaper to go by car. So much
Yeah,
cheaper. And that's
absolutely.
ridiculous.
I understand you've also ch spoken to the chief exec of Network Rail about the declining performance and passenger experience since nationalisation. How did that go?
Well, and we wrote en masse as a group of MPs about that, and we have had apologies. They understand the problem. I'm still not persuaded they have any idea how it's going to be better, apart from the fact it will be nationalized. Nationalization is not a silver bullet. The idea is they will own rail, they will own both the trains and the rails on which they pass, and therefore there'll be more coordination. The worry about that is Northern Rail, the rail has been nationalised for 20 years. The railway, Northern Rail, has been owned for 4 years by the state, and that's one of the worst performers. So the idea of simply bringing those things together is not enough. Now, I know there's more to it than that. I have a lot of time for Lord Hendy, who is the Labour transport spokesperson in the Lords, a minister in the Lords, who has a great background in rail and in TfL. So I have a lot of time for him, but I'm not convinced they know how they're actually going to make this work. And all I hear worries me. They're talking about reducing the power of the Office of Road and Rail. Well, the Office of Road and Rail hold them to account. If they're reducing their powers, the worry is who is going to hold them to account? There's this sort of Labour idea that you centralise. We heard the same yesterday in the context of the NHS, where the minister, Stephen Kinnock, was talking about getting rid of Health Watch. What do Health Watch do? They hold the NHS to account. Now, if we don't hold these bodies to account, these nationalised bodies to account, who is going to do it? So that worries me.
It is a worry. Lastly, on transport, TfL, you spoke to him about the broken annunciators at Wimbledon Station. I remember you saying last time people get onto at Wimbledon or train at Wimbledon, they're not sure they're going to end up in the right place. How, are they doing something about the annunciators?
Well, they promised me they would, but yesterday and again today, I tried to take a photo of it today. For some reason, when you take a photo of the annunciator, the image doesn't come out on a camera cunningly, because again, it was wrong again today. It said both trains were off to Edgware Road. I guess the second one probably wasn't. It said on its front it was not in service, which was clearly ridiculous. So I got on the second train, and happily, it went straight to Westminster. But you don't take your life in your hands, but you take your time in your hands, and you always might end up on the wrong train.
So it's a case of happy days today. That's good. Let's
Yeah.
move on to Sadiq Khan's 2025-2029 police plan, which looks to involve closure of the front police desk at Merton and Wimbledon. I understand Merton Council has called an extraordinary meeting on the 17th of September on local policing. How's that going to go?
Let me correct you. Merton Council hasn't called that meeting. We have been pushing Merton Council to call that meeting, and they initially refused. They initially refused. We then pointed to the fact in the Constitution we could demand it, and they reluctantly agreed. But it took weeks of negotiation until we basically pointed them to the line in the Constitution that gave us the right. So they didn't want to talk about it. Why didn't they want to talk about it? One can only speculate. What's worrying is we've now looked at what Merton Council submitted in the consultation to the Mayor's plan. Merton Council did not talk about either Wimbledon Police Station or Mitcham Police Station in their response to the consultation. It's absolutely shocking. A complete dereliction of duty. I suspect that's why they don't want this meeting now, where we're going to call them out on that. Clearly, removing 24-hour counters from the whole of Merton is a ridiculous thing to do. We need a police presence. We need a 24-hour presence in the borough, and having a functioning counter that does that is part of that process. And of course, the worry is they close the counter one day, next time they could end up closing the station. So we see that as a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope, and there seems to be this reliance that people can contact the police digitally. And there's a lot of people that don't have, they haven't able to do this digital contact. They need a person that they can go and see to talk about their problems, don't they?
That's it. There is this real issue with the digitally excluded, this underclass, particularly older people, but not just older people, and they are totally excluded by saying go onto the internet. Also, just having a physical presence, a someone behind a desk 24 hours a day in the middle of somewhere as busy as Wimbledon, with a huge and growing nighttime economy. We need somewhere for people to go, and it's just such a backward step to do so. The commissioner talks about wanting more local policing, but closing police counters is clearly the opposite of that.
Yeah, and they say, I've spoken to the police commission. They say, well, don't worry, there is always a police car in the vicinity. But there's not. If you have an immediate problem, you need to be able to go and speak to somebody behind a desk. And sometimes that problem could be resolved in a few minutes, can't it?
Exactly. And it just gives a reassurance. Knowing there's someone there gives a reassurance to everyone in the community. And knowing where to go is helpful. And the irony is, Sadiq Khan, in his last election campaign, said, look, we've got police cuts because of the Tory government. When I'm in power, when there's a Labour government in power, things will be much better. Things are getting worse. That's ridiculous.
Let's go into the Save Wimbledon Park. They've launched an appeal against the High Court ruling in favour of the LT allowing expansion of the club. I remember talking to you that you reckon they should be able to reach a compromise. I mean, the LT, £200 million project, 38 grass courts, 8,000-seater stadium, new facilities to the former Wimbledon Golf Club, and it's all on protected metropolitan land. We can see the issue here. Where do you think the resolution might be?
By compromise, by people talking. For a reason I've never understood, the All England Club refused to meet the Save Wimbledon Park group for over 4 years. We've moved on from that. They agreed to my request for a meeting. We've had one meeting. Another one is due later this month. And the answer is compromise. The alternative is 10 years of litigation. We've had the judicial review of the planning application. Now we have the appeal. After that, we're going to court next, or they are going to court ne next year on the public trust of land. And beyond all of that, there's the covenants. There's these three legal issues, none of which are resolved. Rather than spending money on lawyers, both sides should be talking to one another and reaching a compromise, as the All England Club have always done in the past.
It's crazy because the only people that are winning, as you say, are the lawyers. They're making fortunes out of it, aren't they?
They are. As a lawyer, I must defend their profession. They work hard for that money,
I
but
know.
it's true. It's true. It's silly wasting money on lawyers when ultimately it'll be a compromise. And even if, and the point I keep stressing to the All England Club, even if they win on the judicial review and the planning, even if they win on the public trust, the covenant issue is a political one. And as long as Merton Council enforce the covenants, no matter what's happened with planning, no matter what's happened with the public trust, they cannot build on the land if Merton Council enforce the covenants. That's why we've been pushing the Labour Council to say they'll enforce the covenants. They keep refusing to do so. I keep saying to All England Club, remember, there are elections next May. Whoever is in control of that council now then will make the decision. Don't assume just because Labour aren't enforcing the covenants, another party in power won't. The Lib Dems most certainly would enforce the covenants.
So, just to finish on, you've highlighted a situation at the St. Joseph Hood Memorial playing fields where draining works have left the pitches unusable. Has that been resolved now? I know you made some suggestions. Did they take up your suggestions?
They haven't taken our suggestions. We were suggested looking at whether or not artificial turf could be brought in. I understand that that's a rather major investment. I understand their problem. It's been a dry summer, record temperatures for a long period of time. That's caused problems. I understand that. So I'm not being unrealistic. But as so often with Merton Council, it's a lack of communication. They've not talked to people. So they've promised, and they've admitted that they are now doing better on the communication. I think there will still be a delay in using that though that those pitches. I don't think they found alternatives at this stage. They are trying, But at least people are in the know. Once people are in the know, they're understanding because we're not unrealistic. My residents aren't unrealistic. My constituents aren't unrealistic. They need to be communicated with. And too often with Merton Council, there's this feeling of computer says no and do nothing and just wait to see if there's a reaction. We've got to do more than that. We've got to talk to people and bring them in to the problem so they understand it.
So will these sports clubs that use the playing fields not be able to start their season whenever it's due to start?
My current knowledge is they're still not clear they were to start at them at start when they wanted to, but I have to check on that. But at the moment, I've not heard confirmation they will be ready, and I've not heard confirmation that alternatives have been brought in. But we are in dialogue with the council at least.
That's good. Well, we're probably finished there. Just one comment on the up and coming tube strike next week. Do you think there's any chance it's going to be resolved?
I don't know, but I think it's shocking. I think it's absolutely shocking that TfL and the unions are not sorting this out. It has a terrible effect on London. And then, as you know, I own a bar in central London. It has a terrible effect on London hospitality. Hospitality is absolutely on a knife edge at the moment. Strikes like this means you see nobody in hospitality on those evenings. It's absolutely shocking. It has to be sorted out. And I'd call on both the unions and TfL to take a realistic approach to the issues and sort it out.
Where's the major battleground for them?
I only know what I've read in the press. I've heard, I hadn't, as transport spokesman, I've had no detailed briefing, but I've seen the press. The unions are asking for a reduction in the 35-hour week. Well, I think that's unrealistic. If that is what they're asking for, and according to the Times, yes, that's what they were, and TfL was saying it's unrealistic. Well, I agree with that. TfL, it is unrealistic, but it's not for me ultimately to negotiate that deal. But I call on both sides to be realistic. The country is not in a wonderful position. There's not a huge amount of money to go around. People've got to be realistic in their demands and on what they can and can't do.
Thank you. Well, thank you for your time again this morning. Thank you as always coming on to Radio Jackie to talk to me. And I look forward to our next catch up, Paul.
Thanks a lot, Jackie. Nice to speak to you. Bye bye.
And